You'll notice I have a prop today helping me. It was a very long but successful auction last night, and the choice was between using a stool or using drugs. And I thought that maybe drugs could muddle the message somewhat, especially on what I think is probably the most important issue and topic that we have in our lives, and that's about love and about loving. It's interesting that during the 60s, we loved to quote the line that God is love, and it's a nice shortcut. And God and love share an awful lot in common, which is we say and write a lot of nonsense pretending that we understand either God or love and try to capture both of them in the nets of our words. And it's not about the words. When you look at theology and the God that is presented in Hebrew scriptures, in the New Testament, in the Quran, it's a God filled with loving kindness and with anger and with some rejection and a little bit of violence. And no wonder we equate God in love now that I think about it. Because it is not just all sentimentality. And the truth is that love and loving are really hard to do. And when we use the theological question about God, and somebody, as many of you know, people are always, for some reason, because of what I do in the world, asking me the great theological question, well, do you believe in God? And they expect me to say yes and then to defend the God that they don't believe in. And it's the wrong question. Nobody asks me, do I experience the divine? Do I experience moments of transcendence, of connection, and of awe? And the answer is yes. I experience moments of transcendence, of connection, of awe. And I think that those kind of religious experiences are exactly what we mean when we talk about love. Do we experience transcendence, a connection beyond simple physicality, connection to each other, something that is more than just on the surface? Do we experience from time to time just a sense of awe and wonder at the love that we feel, at the loving that we give and we experience and we create? Because ultimately, neither religion nor loving is about belief. It's about action. It's not about a noun. There is God and there is love, and I have love over here and I have the divine over here. It's about the experience. It's about the doing. That love and loving, loving is a verb even unto verily a gerund. It has an action component, not something that you just believe, something that you just celebrate, something that you try to concretize and put up on the mantelpiece behind plexiglass. It is an active, ongoing, evolving, sometimes devolving relationship that we have with each other. And just as with religion, there's a lot of nonsense that we write, a lot of attempts that we make to go into the head trips and the ologies. Let's have a theology. We will understand God with our logic. Let's have a love-ology, and we can measure love and loving. Masters and Johnson's tried it. You may have seen some of the shows. I can tell you it's dull reading. The show may be okay, but Masters and Johnson, as reading, not so great and not so loving. We go into physical head trips. Well, you know, it's about endorphins. It's about all kinds of love drugs and hormones that flood our system. It's about epinephrine, or it used to be adrenaline before it became epinephrine, because adrenaline was too easy to spell, apparently. And we have all kinds of ways of measuring that love reaction. I don't want to go there. But that's not where loving resides. It's not in the measurement. It's not in the grandeur of the tombs that we build for the mighty dead. Our loving is the connection that we make of people, of nature, of life, that we show our caring and our respect for. And it's not all sentimental. And it's not all an ology. And neither is it linguistics. We can go into very nice head trips about, well, you know, the Greeks had three words for it. They had eros, romantic love. They had agape, divine love and acceptance. And they had phile, which is the root of a Philly cheesesteak, a love that I can understand. We can divide and dissect all of those things, and they're all true enough. But loving escapes the nets of those kinds of linguistics and either cynicism or sentimentality. The act of loving is what connects us. I remember when I was in high school and had actually zero appreciation of what loving could be, we had an exchange student from Sweden. And so all of us, this being the early 60s, wanted to quiz him on, you have free love up there? You have free love in Sweden? Is it something to do with the long winters and how cold it is? And even in high school, this young man had a certain amount of wisdom. He said, there's no such thing as free love. It always comes with a cost. Now, I didn't realize how wise those words were. For a couple of decades. Okay, I'm a slow learner. And found out that there's a real big difference between free sex and free love. In the 60s, some folks figured out that getting physically naked was not that difficult. Getting emotionally naked, taking off the armor, and opening ourselves to real intimacy, that is the cost of loving. It's to open ourselves up to another person's joy and pain and story. It is to pay, in the words of T.S. Eliot, nothing less than everything. It is not all romantic and sentimental. It opens us to the heartbreak of loss. When we love, we know that we have put our hearts out there with a kind of vulnerability that they can, with any luck at all, be broken. You do not want to go through life in such a way, wearing such armor, that your heart cannot be broken. There's a line that touched my heart when I was very young. I think I was 13 when my uncle passed away. And during the service, in the introduction to the Kaddish, there was a line that I recognized at 13 was important. And it has comforted me ever since, and with virtually every funeral or memorial service I've done, I use this line, and it says very simply, our grief is according to our blessing, and tears are the tender tribute of yearning affection for one who is gone but can never be forgotten. We would not go through our lives and consider ourselves blessed if there were not people for whom our hearts would break should they go away physically or emotionally. We want that connection. We do not want to live in armor. It clangs and it protects us, in the words of Eugene O'Neill, it protects us from touch and truth. Loving is the ultimate vulnerability, and it is scary, and it should be. Romance, the way we normally think of it as we approach Valentine's Day, is wonderful. And romance tends to deal with an idealized vision and person. And usually these visions and projections cannot be lived up to. The fantasies don't come true because you have to actually love real people and not simply their image. If you fall in love on the first date, you fell in love with a fraud. Because every first date, and if any of you don't know this, every first date is a fraud because we're being much better than we are. And sometimes we fall in love with those projections. But as Brad played so beautifully with My Funny Valentine, I'm not getting choked up, I'm just choking. As he played with My Funny Valentine, your looks are laughable, unphotographable. Yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your chin a little weak? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? Real loving is loving real people with our problems, with our flaws, with our humanity. My favorite love poem is not one of the lovey-dovey poems. My favorite love poem, unsurprisingly, was written by Shakespeare. Why should I try to write something when Shakespeare did a perfectly nice job? And by saying this, well, you will recognize the sonnet. My mistress' eyes are nothing like the sun. Coral is far more red than her lips. If snow be white, then her breasts are dun. If hairs be wires, black wires grow from her head. I have seen roses damask red and white, but no such roses see I in her cheeks. And in some perfumes there is more delight than in the breath that from my mistress reeks. I love to hear her speak, yet well I know that music hath a far more pleasing sound. I grant I never saw a goddess go. My mistress, when she walks, treads on the ground. And yet, by heaven, I think my love as rare as any she belied with false compare. That's love. When I counsel people before weddings, and I get the lovey-dovey, we'll never fight, I'll always look at you, and I'm going, all right, capture it, keep it, take this moment and draw upon it when the tides of life and love and relationship get slightly at their ebb, but understand that loving, whether a parent or a child, I had two granddaughters sleep over at the house last night after the auction. I had a granddaughter who did not want to go to sleep and who thought that 5 o'clock was a fine time to meet the neighborhood rooster and start wailing. And I told her that as Unitarians we didn't approve of wailing. And she didn't get the joke. And I didn't expect her to. And so when you love someone, as Anne Morrow Lindberg wrote, you don't love them all the time in exactly the same way. There are tides of love, of life, of relationship, and they flow and they ebb, and it's engaging and it's hard, and it takes an act of tremendous courage to love another person, to trust them with your truth, to trust each other with each other's hearts, to treat each other's hearts well and with respect. Loving. Is God loving? Well, I don't know that God is love, but I'd be willing to say that loving is God. If you understand God as being the source of meaning, the foundation of being, the thing that keeps the universe together, that keeps families and communities together. There's friction because, as I'm fond of saying, you can't make love without friction. You can't make love without the truth of your joy, of your pain, of your ambitions, of your failures. Loving is having shoulders to cry on, arms to embrace, hands to pick us up, hands occasionally to push us down. It is truth-telling in the nicest possible way. And it's not a sudden epiphany. When I was ordained, I remember the head of the seminary of Star King Seminary charging me and saying, John, your job is to love everyone in your congregation. I thought that that was probably the silliest thing I'd ever heard, and it took me 10 years to understand what it even meant. It took me another 10 years to believe that it was even potentially possible. And now I know that it is. That we can love each other, not necessarily uncritically and not blindly, but with vulnerability and respect, with joy in being together, with some pain in being apart, that we reach across these boundaries of skin and touch one another. And it is the most important and fulfilling religious, social, familial, personal obligation and blessing that we have. It's not sentimental alone, but sentimentality and music and violins and roses are nice. But the truth of the courage it takes to love one another should inspire all of our hearts to take chances and touch each other and hold each other in our hearts and our arms and to verily love one another.